Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Look, you're listening to Rahala Stupa. I'm Richard Herring. My guest this week is my friend and fantastic comedian, Paul Sinha. Has some sad and amazing stories to tell us about in this interview. He's very open. He's a great guy. And you're going to really love this one, I think. We're doing loads more of these throughout 2020. We're going to keep them coming out of our podcast pipe as quickly as we can. May not be two a week throughout the whole year, but we recorded 100 Rahalastapas last year in 2019, which is insane. So that's why you're getting so many right now. We will be back at the Edinburgh Fringe, doing the first 10 days of the Edinburgh Fringe with 10 shows on in the afternoon at the same venue as last year. Tickets will be available for that pretty soon if they're not up yet. So we'd love to see you there. If you go to richherring.com/gigs, you can find out where all of these podcasts will be and when they will be. And go to gofasterstripe.com/badges, become a monthly badger, or gofasterstripe.com and help us out by buying some books or a game of trumps, which is very enjoyable. People have been saying how much they love the game. So why not get your own copy of that game? There is a few hundred thousand of them left. So this is a great podcast. You are going to enjoy it. Let's sit back, relax, and enjoy Rahala Stupa with Paul Sinha, the Cinnaman. Still don't. He still hasn't explained if that's a pun on cinnamon or if he's a sinner. Doesn't make sense. Anyway, 1 minute 42 this time. So, you know, comfortably within the 2 minute mark. So fuck you all. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Oxford Playhouse. Please welcome a man who has been wandering around Oxford with the La Recherche du Temps Perdu. It's Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Hello, Oxford. Hello, Oxford. It's great to be back. Welcome to Richard Herring's Longing for Student Time Machine podcast. You have to do a new podcast every time. I just want to do one podcast where it's I just like to do the opening where it's went. Okay, I've gone mad. Don't worry. It's just tiredness. You have to change what you do with podcasts. You have to keep moving it around. And yeah, I'm just sitting. What
It's sort of weird. I was sitting in Pret a Manger again just before this show as well. Same last time. And what, different jumper, can't be the same show. Unbreakable code. And like, just all the students, they just look the same as all the students I was around with. I just want to go back and have another crack. That's all. I just want to go back in time, be 20 again. Though I'd be happy to do it as a 52-year-old as well, though it might be a bit weird. Sort of specialist pornography for that one. So it's... I was hanging out in the Oxford Story, the fantastic that I presume is still here because it was so amazing. I was there in 2007. It's like a very slow roller coaster where you travel around on a desk and look at a mannequin of Lewis Carroll in a bad wig. You should never have closed it down. This is worse than the Tales of Robin Hood. How could you let it close? And a man pretending to be Percy Bysshe Shelley said he called it Rehelistopus. So I just said, he didn't say what Bysshe stood for. Bisexual, young, sonnet, sex. No, okay. Drowned. There isn't one for that in there. So did he drown? Oh, suddenly, I'm not sure. It's been a great week for me. Today is 300 days since I last had an alcoholic drink. Would you believe it? I seem quite drunk, don't I? That's just, I'm drunk on sanctimony. So I'm very excited about that. See if I can get to 36. I'm quite missing it now. Quite fun. Should I just get a little drink? No, I won't. Bad news for me. My daughter decided she wanted to marry a balloon. This week. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree, does it? Is it cheating to have sex with the balloon? I don't know. The balloon is a human form. It's Emmett from the Lego movie that my son had for his birthday, and she'd taken a shine to him, and she was holding his hand and saying she was his married. She's what she called him. Not sure I approve. She's too young. But she's also got into comedy. I did mention in a recent podcast her knock-knock jokes, and I've written one down for you. This is the one she told me at breakfast yesterday morning. Knock-knock, who's there? Ketchup bottle. Ketchup bottle who? He's always trying to make pizza. Ugh, that smells! That's pretty good. Just love the idea. He's always trying to make pizza. That's the first. He's always trying to make pizza. She's deconstructing jokes already. She doesn't, to be fair, understand how knock-knock jokes work, but it's still better than any of the ones I've managed. Look, we're going to crack straight on because we've got a fantastic guest this week and limited time to interview. So will you please welcome this week's guest? He's probably best known for his appearance on Celebrity Catchphrase, surely the greatest ITV quiz show there is. After Tipping Point. Will you please welcome Paul Sinner, ladies and gentlemen? Come on, sit down. Hey, sub homeless. Water. We thought of literally everything.
You have, yes.
How did you get on the catchphrase, Celebrity Catchphrase?
Well, it's interesting you ask, because before when we had a chat in the dressing room, you said, don't bring up Parkinson's disease with every question. And yet I had the misfortune to record Celebrity Catchphrase 5 days after being diagnosed with Parkinson's. Had to do it on other commitment, because it was an opportunity to make a lot of money for a charity very close to my heart, which is me. It was an opportunity. But it's fair to say that my brain's neurons weren't firing at any level. Right. I was glad I did it because I've always enjoyed the show.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that somehow or another I raised $5,500 for the charity. But in terms of actually being an opportunity to show the clarity of thought and speed at which my brain is well known for, it failed at every level. It was kind of embarrassing.
You still won, though?
No.
No, that was second.
Here we go. Beaten by Anton Dubek, fine, intelligent man. And Gemma Collins from the noted wildlife documentary, The Only Way is Essex.
I mean, it's not a real quiz, is it? Just looking at pictures and saying what you see. That's not...
No, but in many ways, it's just... I mean, you say that, but in many ways, it's testing an intelligence that's more valuable in life than knowing that Percy Bysshe Shelley did indeed drown in 1822.
I was just worried because the audience didn't seem to get the reference and I thought it's Oxford. They must be clever. That's how I remember, because Bysshe sounds a bit like fish. I always think that's kind of ironic that he drowned.
Oh, OK.
That's how I remember.
Or Shelley rhymes with at the bottom of the sea, very smelly. So, that's how you want to remember.
How did you get on in Tipping Point Lucky Stars, I believe it's...
That was better. I mean, I hadn't watched enough Tipping Point to have a clue how to do the tactics.
Yeah,
but I did finish second out of three, and a respectable second to the brain box that is Mark Labette. Okay. But I really enjoyed that. And Ben Shepherd's great. To be fair, Stephen Mulhern is great as well.
Yeah.
They're brilliant presenters. But I enjoyed Tipping Point. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've done Tipping Point.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not allowed to. It's not been on yet, so I'm not allowed to talk about it yet.
You've never struck me as being ITV.
Well, that's, I feel I've never been on The Chase. And, no. You know, I feel it's your fear of my skill that was... to put you up.
That will be
I think they've been going, Edgar, Paul, can we have Richard?
It's not, no, it's not that they're waiting for Stuart Leaf to say yes or no.
He'd be very bad and also would absolutely never do it. I will 100% do it if you ask me. So I will
put a word in for you. And actually, the producer's a massive fan of yours. Really? She's a very big
Well, fan. If Tipping Point have had me on, then I am very IT. They can have me now. Because I've done, once Tipping Point comes out and they see, well, I can't say.
It's not long before Family Fortunes, Herring.
I did get offered Family Fortunes when I was going out with Julia Sawala. She was going to be on Family Fortunes.
That's a superb bit of name drop.
Thank you. But I was going to be on as her common law fuck buddy. I think I was her boyfriend. I think that's what I was. So, look, I guess, because, like, otherwise... We're going to have to do the serious bit really near the start.
Is this your show? You can do whatever you like.
But I think it's we're going to have to discuss straight away what your year's been. It's described in the papers as a roller coaster, an anus horribilis, which I always thought of when I saw you, and anus mirabilis. Thought I'd put some light humour in just to start us going.
You can see how he got the jobs on ITV now, don't you?
But yeah, you've had like some extremely bad news that I think you knew was coming. But
well, it's been an odd year.
Yeah.
My year essentially starts on Christmas Day when I got pissed on Prosecco and decided to do something that I'd never thought I was going to do, which is to propose to my boyfriend of the last who I've been going out with since 2016. I have to say that the thought of marrying him had not crossed my mind at any stage during the relationship because we're just not that type of people.
Right.
However, just watching him, I've got an autistic nephew and what they call a neurotypical niece, although that's the first time I've used that word on stage, and he's so effortlessly their uncle that I just thought, why not make this an official thing? And I decided on that day that I'd get married or to propose, and in... A rare event, really. I nailed it. I felt the proposal was amazing. I got everything right.
Yeah.
I had a speech prepared, and somehow or another, we ended up on a bridge over the River Tiber with the moon shining in Rome. And it couldn't have been any more romantic. And I honestly didn't know what he was going to say. And he immediately said yes. And I thought, this is great. I've got something to talk about at Edinburgh last. So I decided to call my show A Hazy Little Thing Called Love. I kind of got lucky because up to June, I hadn't written a word of the show because I tore the show the previous year and then used June and July to write the show. And I was struggling. But then I got an escape route on May the 30th this year when I was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease.
Yeah.
And one of my first thoughts was, excellent, I don't have to do Edinburgh this year. I've got an escape route. That was obviously not my first thought, but it wasn't unexpected. I've had a problem with my right shoulder for... since September 2017,
okay.
And it's been treated as orthopaedic all along. The first thing I did when I got engaged was basically a specialist shoulder surgeon to go, I'm getting married in December, can you do something about the shoulder? And he examined it and did MRI scans, and as is the wont with extremely arrogant surgical consultants, he decided that it was going to be a piece of piss to sort my shoulder out.
Right.
And so the first time I was put on a general anaesthetic in January... And by March, I'd had literally no improvement in the frozen shoulder whatsoever. And the physiotherapist that I was seeing started making ominous tones. He wasn't saying to me, there's something wrong with you. He was saying, why don't you see your GP and see if you can get some sort of referral to a neurologist? And then in May, my life kind of fell apart. I was in New Zealand, and in New Zealand, the Chase is on three times a day on their main channel. We are proper celebrities in New Zealand.
Yeah.
It's a really weird thing to go through, not least because for the first time in my life, I was selling well. And this was a totally new experience for me. But at the same time, my limp was getting worse. I had a nasty fall in the middle walking from one bar to another, and I went onto this website that tells you whether it's neurology or alcohol. It's called TripAdvisor. It's really good. Who doesn't love a good pun? Who doesn't love a good pun? But I became increasingly aware over the course of the month that I probably had Parkinson's disease. And that was confirmed when I got back.
Yeah, so that's... I mean, like, some comedians would say, oh, good, I've got an Edinburgh show. You were saying, oh, good, I don't have to do an Edinburgh show.
Well, there was no question that I had to cancel Edinburgh. I just didn't have a chance to make a decision.
Yeah.
I think that I was diagnosed a few days before the brochure came out properly and tickets went on sale. And I didn't know what medication I was going to take. I didn't know for how long I was going to take it. I didn't know whether there was going to be investigations all through the months of June and July. I just didn't know whether I had any time to commit to writing an Edinburgh show. So I thought it was best to step out.
Yeah, no, I think that's best. And I don't know. So for people who don't know, what happens with Parkinson's disease and what's the... It's a long term.
Well, I've done some research, and what happens is you prolong your glorious heavyweight boxing career until it's all a bit too late. I don't know. I mean, I'm a doctor. I'm meant to know this stuff.
Yeah.
But the thing with Parkinson's is everybody is different. I'll show you here. My tremor is light. It's there on the one side. I didn't present in a typical way. I presented with a frozen shoulder. It's a way that has been known. But you become increasingly aware that no two people are the same, and you just don't know. I don't know if they've caught this early. I've no idea. There's just no way of telling whether they've caught it early or whether they caught it later. What I do know is that I'm young for it, and therefore, hopefully, I'll be at the sort of forefront of any research or drugs trials or this, that and the other. But at the moment, I don't care. I've got Parkinson's. I don't know how to deal with it because I don't know how it's going to manifest itself over the years. It's my job to make sure that I enjoy the time that I'm healthy. That's my thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the first thing I did was write a show. And I've got a show, and I've done it 6 nights already. And more importantly, I closed a Parkinson's benefit at the Comedy Store a couple of weeks ago, which is, as you can probably imagine, nerve-wracking to play a room where there are any up to 50 to 100 people with Parkinson's disease. And me... has decided to become irreverent about the whole situation.
Yeah.
It's a risk, but luckily it was a risk that turned out to be worth taking.
But
you don't know whether your tone is appropriate.
No.
Because, of course, there are other people out there who are suffering a lot more than I am at the moment.
But comedy is, you know, is always a way through with anything that's a setback, anything that's an illness, anything, you know. With these podcasts, you know, it's so amazing how many people... will email me and say how this has helped, you know, not expecting help. Comedy has helped them get through depression or through, like, suicidal thoughts, all sorts of things. And comedy is, I think, so important in if you're going through something and someone else is going through it.
It's
to be able to find
undoubtedly true what you say. However, none of us, and I mean literally no comedian I know, has gone into comedy to inspire people.
No.
Or be a role model. Or be... be anything like that. We go in to make people laugh. That's why we do it. It's the addiction is the sound of people laughing and appreciating what you do. It's how you reach that point that changes as your life changes. When I started as a comedian, you're not going to believe this. When I started as a comedian, I used to bore people to tears with relentless jokes about being gay. I mean, it's an extraordinary thing to imagine now, but I was very one-liner driven. So all I wanted to do was make people laugh. Then you're on stage and you develop a bit more craft and a bit more idea of what you want to do, and you start telling longer stories and anecdotes. And then after that, you start thinking, especially given how many years you've been doing Edinburgh, Edinburgh was quite a late thing in my career. 2004 was my first Edinburgh show, 9 years after my first gig. You start structuring a show, trying to work out what you're trying to say, and I've got a fuckload of things I'd like to say right now. And that's what's driven the righteous... not. I don't know if anger's the right word, but the righteous spirit and passion of what the show that I've just written.
Yeah.
Because the thing that drives me more than anything else, with my years on the chase and with the months following Parkinson's, is that we live in a country where our tabloid press are utter scum and don't give a shit about anything you say or do as long as they can misrepresent it and lie about it and cover your story. I had so many offers of interviews after the diagnosis where the press promised to be sympathetic and empathetic, and they're just not capable. My anger.
The fact they have to promise that, Paul, is kind of weird, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
But Parkinson's, oh, we'll be empathetic. Okay, yeah, I sort of assumed you would be.
There is a righteous anger that I have that's very much driven by the depressing thought that when my diagnosis came out on Friday, I think the 15th of June, every single offer of an interview was from a newspaper that I wouldn't touch with a barge pole. And The Sun didn't even do their research and find out which football team I've supported since the age of 7. that absolute lack of research. So yeah. I think the big thing that I want to stress is that I'm still alive.
Yes.
I'm still a professional. I am a professional quizzer, but I'm also a professional comedian. And I've got national tour coming up next year. And honestly, it's really good. The show that I was going to write before I got Parkinson's was, in comparison, going to be shit. So if this cloud does have a silver lining, it is that I've got a really, really passionate and, in my opinion, funny show about everything that's happened to me in the last 12 to 18 months.
Of course. And I think you wrote a blog quite early on. I think, you sort of said, you've said in interviews that you were, had a couple of weeks of turmoil and then went public with it and wrote, but in your own terms, and wrote a very heartfelt but very beautiful blog about it.
That's very kind of you to say.
Yeah.
It upset my dad, actually, who didn't understand why I had to go public.
Right.
I don't know if anybody like me is obsessed with Googling their name. But when you Google your name, you find out what other people have been Googling about you. And I'd suddenly noticed from about March, April, people are Googling Paul Sinha stroke, ? Paul Sinha neurological disease, ? And Paul Sinha Parkinson's, ? And I thought, I need to have some agency in the whole way that this news is being delivered. I can't just have people gossiping, because Taskmaster proved to be a very big thing in my life. Because when I watched episodes of Taskmaster, and every neurologist I've ever spoken to who's watched episodes of Taskmaster, they can see that I had Parkinson's, something that I couldn't see with my own eyes.
Yeah.
That's been a key part of the whole process. Is while my mind and my body were breaking down, there were 10 episodes of Dave's Most Popular Comedy Show that could be used as a clinical study in this. This is what happened. I'm not saying that I was shit on Taskmaster just because of the Parkinson's. I would never be that disingenuous. Yeah. I can't do tasks to save my life. I just had no idea how bad I was going to be at the tasks on Taskmaster. I just didn't know. What I also didn't know was in the live studio tasks, there were some that I just couldn't do because I physically couldn't do them.
Yeah.
And that was one of the big worries going to the comedy festival in New Zealand. I knew something was up.
Yeah. But equally, you knew that people were twigging, that people would be talking about it if you didn't take the control of it.
Somebody actually, the Sunday after I was diagnosed, somebody actually sent me a photo of Rory Kecklin-Jones, the BBC journalist who has Parkinson's, and said, "No offence, Paul, but..." And just showed me a photo of somebody else with Parkinson's. And I thought, right. this is a lovely way that strangers communicate with you. I like the fact that he thought it had never crossed my mind that I might have a neurological disease.
Yeah.
Thank you for filling in the gaps in my knowledge and understanding.
Yeah, well, people are... I was going to ask you what's the... People must be treating you in a different way. And I know you ask in your blog to be treated the same.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, that. I did say in my blog, all I want is for people to treat me the same. And ever since I completed that blog, all I want is for people to treat me differently. You say what you think is right, but actually there are some people that behave with spectacular thoughtlessness. People that ask for a selfie and go, "Come on then, smile." That's a nice one. Or people that go, I know you've got a frozen shoulder, but can you sign these 17 photographs I've got of you that I've collected? Things that sort of thoughtless things like that.
Yeah.
I went on a very horrific train journey last week, and one of my very good friends wrote on Facebook, "This is why we have cars." And I wanted to go, "Well, I don't, because I'm not allowed to drive anymore." Had it ever occurred to you that I don't drive because I'm no longer allowed to drive?
Sure.
But you can't expect everybody to live their life through the prism of what you're going through. They say they will when they send you messages. Comedians send messages going, "Anything you want, Paul, anything you want, just say so." And then you turn up to Marcus Brigstock's house demanding a foot massage and a ratatouille. And, and he tells you where to go. But you know that there is a sincerity and an insincerity that life gives you. And it's fine. People have been nice. People have been supportive.
Yeah. No, of course. But I mean, but then you had this, you know, you've had this fantastic success with the quizzing. You've won the Great British Quiz.
It's not a Channel 4 spin-off.
The Great British Bake Off. The Quizzing Championship. Yeah. Which is an incredible achievement because, as you yourself say, you sort of see yourself as the Tottenham of quizzing.
It's the biggest thing I've ever done in my life. I have to say, but a lot of that is not the actual achievement, but what went before it. Because winning the British Quiz Championship isn't as difficult as it sounds, in that it's a 240 quiz questions on a Saturday morning. And if they happen to suit you better than your rivals, then you've got a decent chance of winning. It's about what sort of day you have. But the fact of the matter is that I worked really hard, because I went on honeymoon to Berlin 4 months before getting married, because I didn't have anything to do in August. In August, because the Edinburgh Festival was cancelled, we decided to go to Berlin. And me and Ollie, my fiancé, just sat in bed for most of it with him firing questions at me. Rock and roll.
It's the honeymoon we all want.
Because I wanted to do well at the British Quiz Championships, because I didn't know when I'd next get a chance to compete at the highest level, not knowing how my life was going to pan out. I thought, British Quiz Championships, let's give this a go. And then with a week to go, a friend of mine called Barry, a really lovely friend, invited me to a dinner party with other quiz friends the night before. And it was a massive dilemma to have done all that work and then go, shall I just get absolutely shit-faced on the Friday night? Because I love the people that I was having the dinner party with. And I did. So I didn't just win the British Quiz Championships. I won it having got voluntarily shit-faced the night before, thinking that I'd basically thrown away my chances of winning the British Quiz Championships. And I cried for about... I couldn't do any of the rest of the day's quizzing. So I just sat in a room and cried for hours.
Yeah.
And the reason I cried for hours is... I never thought I'd reach my Everest, and I certainly never thought I'd reach my Everest 2 months after getting diagnosed with the worst news of my life. Realistically, it just won't get any better. This will be the best quiz result I've ever had in my life, and I made it just in time, just before the dopamine starts depleting and that I start getting more unwell. I just made it in time, and that was the most amazing thing I've ever done in my life. And it's... When you describe it, it sounds exciting. It's an utterly tedious spectacle. having 150 quizzes sat in a room silently answering written quiz questions. It's not a spectacle. But for those that take part in it, it is the biggest. It's just the biggest thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is incredible. You know, it's probably even better than winning Catchphrase. So,
technically, Gemma Collins is the actual British quiz champion.
That's true, but you wrote a great blog about it as well. And the questions that came up, you made some great educated guesses about seven or eight of them, which I guess everyone who's done quizzes has had that sort of experience. Yeah. Where you,
but sometimes you don't. I saw the paper. I missed the World Championships, which was the biggest event of my year, because I was having a brain scan, and I saw the paper afterwards, and I thought, none of this I revised. I'm glad I missed it. None of this stuff that came up, I was part of my revision. But the opposite happened. When it needed to happen. And so sometimes you can spend your life wallowing in the bad luck that you have, or you can spend your life celebrating the good fortune that you have, and I'd prefer to do the latter.
Yes, good. I mean, the questions on it are nuts, though. I mean, those eight questions... On the blog, you do eight questions, and they're who won the Welsh weightlifter... What is it? Strong Man of the Year or something?
Yeah,
they're
but insane. But yeah, if you didn't have them hard, then Kevin Ashman off Eggheads would score 240 out of 240 and nobody would bother turning up. You have to have hard questions.
Yeah.
But also there are a lot of easy ones. I just didn't put those on the block. It's a bit like The Chase.
It's a bit like The Chase.
A lot of the questions are really, really easy. Because you can't just ask difficult questions or people just walk out, their soul crushed. You have to keep people's interest in it.
Yeah. If I come on The Chase, I'm going for the biggest money. Give me lots of... I'll go for the biggest money.
Yeah.
Guaranteed. There's no point in coming in, is there?
I've watched your career for a number of years now, Richard. And none of this is a surprise.
You put me on. Give me 80 to 100 grand. I'll go for it. There's no point in going on, is there, for like £1,000 divided between four?
Well, no, there isn't. But you get that anyway on Celebrity Chase. You get £1,000 for your charity anyway.
Okay. And how much? How much do I get for me?
Do you know, it depends on status. Not as much as Jack White always has.
No, that's a shame. They do. They pay you for going on these shows. I donate my month fee to my bank account. So it's that's why I always do that. So you're getting married in December?
Yep.
So that, you know, on balance, there's more good things than bad things this year. On balance, it's turned out pretty well.
I'd like to see your calculations, actually. You're working out. But no, I've changed. Yeah. I've watched my personality change. Yeah. Since I started medication, and it's tough to know that your personality is changing. I throw tantrums more often, I'm more emotionally fragile, but what I'm not is depressed. I'm not down about having Parkinson's, and I don't think I'm going to be down even when it actually properly kicks in, because I enjoy life, and I enjoy being a comedian, and I enjoy being a quizzer, and I'm getting married in December, and it's going to be absolutely gobsmackingly amazing to marry a guy I sort of love.
It's good to start out that way because that's how it ends up.
Yeah.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Let's ask you an emergency question. We'll come back. We'll come back to this. So the people here tonight, some of them wait since last week and haven't had one of these. So they'll be very excited about it. Oh, let me ask you my new emergency question. It worked really well last week. Have you ever been... I can't even read it now. Have you ever been put into a poisonous coma by hornets?
Nearly. Yeah. Walking holiday, 1981.
Really? Okay. So it's a great question.
Y Valley, 1981. Yeah. Both of them summer, as I know it, because I missed all of it because we were walking the Y Valley. And a guy called Raymond Leake, I think, had an anaphylactic reaction and his arm swelled to at least 1.5, possibly even 2 times.
Wow.
2.5 times, maybe, the size it usually is. And Mr. Ashenhurst, I think, our English teacher went, I don't know if you're aware, but there's a common English phrase, don't stir a hornet's nest. And he thought he was being funny, and the rest of us were all in agony and didn't think it was funny at all. So I have been put into a near coma by a hornet.
I think probably everyone's probably got a story about being stung by an insect. Probably not as good as George Monbiot's. Okay, I'd ask you that question. Did I ask? I don't think I ever asked you. Have you ever seen a ghost?
No.
Okay.
I did go to a wedding in Calcutta many, many years ago, which we didn't want to go to because we didn't know anybody there. But my dad said to me and my sister, "You've got to go." My cousin said he's dying to meet you, and you can guess where that story goes. We got there; he was dead.
Oh my God!
We met him on a slab. I don't think that quite counts as
that's
a ghost.
That's not a dead person; isn't a ghost.
No,
I mean maybe they might become
that's the,
one.
That's the closest.
Yeah, but you've got to see the spirit aside from the body. If the dead person's there and then they're sitting beside going, that one's the ghost. How about this question? How about this question for you, Paul? If you could have any one item from any art gallery or museum, all the art galleries and museums in the world get together and say, we're going to give you one of our things and you can take it away. You can choose anything from any museum or art gallery. What one thing would you take into your possession?
Probably Hieronymus Bosch's Garden of Earthly Delights.
Okay.
Because I don't know if you've seen it. It just never stops.
Yeah.
I've never seen any painting with more on it and more detail. You could look at it for 5 days and then you could go, oh, there's two goblins fucking. It's the one that would keep me occupied for the longest. So
that's a good answer. So you're nearly 50. You're coming up to 50 next year. I thought you were younger than that. You look younger than that.
That's very kind. It's the medication.
How are you feeling about hitting 50?
So the odd thing is, Richard, it's not even close to being on my agenda. I don't care. Yeah. I genuinely don't care. I'd be more worried if I wasn't coming up to 50.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons. it's never been important to me. And I just realised I'm doing something very special on my 50th birthday.
Yeah.
Which is that I'm going to see the Pet Shop Boys at the O2. I couldn't quite believe it. They're my favourite band by a country mile. They were the soundtrack to all my lonely standing in a gay bar in London years. And and so lonely, in fact, that I once waited till the end and found the last bloke standing. And he was so old, he told me he used to be a secretary to Harold Wilson. That was a... So the Pet Shop Boys were the perfect soundtrack to that bleakness. And I've always admired their music. They're by far my favourite band. And I got a tweet from a mate going, have you bought tickets for the Pet Shop Boys? And not only was I astonished to find they were playing the O2 on my 50th birthday, but it is a greatest hits tour. Because there's one thing I'll say about the Pet Shop Boys, you don't want to listen to any of their songs from the last 5 years. It's a horrible reminder that doesn't matter how creative you get, you soon eventually lose it. So it's that greatest hits tour, and I can't think of any better way to spend my 50th
That's
birthday.
That's good. I didn't do anything on my 50th birthday.
Well, the Pet Shop Boys weren't touring.
They weren't. I don't think I'd have chosen the Pet Shop Boys. But I'm not sure what I would
They'll
have
They'll be
chosen.
Gutted.
I wouldn't know what I've chosen. How did you find Taskmaster apart from... Did you enjoy... Because Taskmaster's my, dream job, really. I'd love to go on that. You're competitive.
Not remotely competitive. You're as not... you may have seen on Taskmaster. First things first. The caveat's out of the way. The team are amazing. Alex Horn is a genius. Greg Davis is one of the funniest human beings that has ever lived. They're great, and you're treated incredibly well. I felt all along, somehow or another, that I was letting down a family heirloom. Because the show's so popular and has such a sort of loyal fan base who turn up to the live show wanting to know how we've done in the tasks. And they watch me, and they just go, what the fuck was that? And what it was a man who didn't know he had a neurological disease, who has spent his entire life being unable to do the simplest of tasks, whose only sickie that he ever called when he was a kid was when me and the Sinha family failed to make a boat for a scientist's open day. I've never been able to do anything. I've never been able to laterally think. This is why I don't put myself on a pedestal, because of this quizzing thing. This quizzing thing is the one intellectual pursuit that I'm actually good at. Anything else, I'm dog shit, to be honest with you. And it came across on Taskmaster. I can't make stuff. I can't physically create stuff. And I just didn't spot every single trick and shortcut. I failed to spot them again and again and again. And it was tough.
But on Taskmaster, that's quite good. It's quite good to have someone
who's the
doofus, isn't it? It is. But that's the best person on it.
The
Phil Wang, unless Phil Wang was in you, wasn't in your one.
Well, I mean, if I can give you a joke that I got in my show from the catchphrase day, when I went into my dressing room and I said, why are we as a nation that Boris Johnson's going to become Prime Minister because people find his incompetence appealing, and Gemma Collins made a fortune because people find her incompetence appealing. And my agent then turns to me and says, oh, by the way, your money's just come through for Taskmaster. That was, everyone kept saying to me, they'll love you. They'll absolutely love you. And I didn't believe them because I wasn't just going through the incompetence of the tasks. I was going through, it's really hard to say this because it sounds like an excuse, but I was going through some intellectual rigidity on the show where banter was flying left, right, left, right. And I was sat there looking gormless for half of it because I just found it hard to get into the pace of the show. Mm-hmm. And it was only when I was watching it back that I thought to myself, oh, I know, I now know what was going on. And for me, it's a really hard watch, which is a shame because they're fantastic tasks. It's a fantastic TV show, but it is now, sadly, a bit of a clinical study.
But, I mean, you know, for people who spotted that, but obviously most people, because if it was that obvious, then people, you know, it would have been more noted. You know, people who were looking for that would have spotted it. But I honestly don't think most people would have spotted it.
No, and the ones that I did really badly in, I really did enjoy watching back. the one, the blindfold mobility scooter. And I didn't come last in that task, you know. Someone other, Lou Sanders, came last in that task. She looked at me with daggers when she realised I'd scored more than her. But And there was also an episode where I won. And, you know, I'm not going to cast aspersions, but it was very nice of the producers to put together a show where my good tasks all came in the same episode. I thought that was a nice piece of scheduling.
Well, it's a lovely show, and you're very lucky to have been on it. So it's...
So
like
it's a chase,
funny
enough.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, lovely. What I love, you've talked about the tabloids, but I say this with all the... It's the chase and Pointless especially, but the Daily Express and the Daily Mail go mad for those articles.
Well, it's the Express that's the origin.
You'll never believe what happened on the chase and then sort of nothing.
Yeah, I'm aware that Dave Gorman's got stuff about this in the show that I've chatted to him about. Okay. But, I mean, this is really of interest if you are a fan of the sort of absolute pond life of online tabloid pages. But every episode that we do is covered, no matter whether anything actually of interest happens. Yeah. And my favourite was Chase fans in turmoil as Cineman drops major revelation. When I read it, the major revelation was, I can't make an omelette. That was... a national news story in the Daily Express. And mostly, it is amusing. But ever since June, when they don't realise that the episodes that are being shown at the moment were filmed before my diagnosis, there's the idiocy is... there's one where Bradley says something really mild to me, like, you're always horrible to me, or something like that. And all it was a bit of banter. Well, I put him down in some way, and he just said, lightheartedly, you're always horrible to me. And somebody made this out as though, on a newspaper made it out as though this was particularly tasteless thing to say, given his recent diagnosis of Parkinson's disease.
Yeah.
And like, what the fuck are you talking about? This episode was shown, was recorded like 8, 9, 10 months before. It's when they use that, it's really weary to know that once a week you're going to be in the Daily Express. and it's quite a wearying thing.
It's just
but
so
sometimes it's more than wearying. Sometimes it's like, and I've decided that when I think they've crossed the line, I will bring it up on Twitter. And sometimes they have changed the headline, so it's not that they don't. As a result,
it's such an odd. You know, of all the things you could get that preoccupied about, and I love quiz shows.
Yeah,
and but it's such a weird thing to be putting in the newspapers, but I guess that's happening more and more. You know, things come. You tweet something sometimes. One tweets something sometimes, and it becomes a news story. You know, a joke about something becomes an actual story in the news. It's sort of journalists aren't really looking much for their computers for a lot of their stories now.
Yeah, I'm raising money for my wedding. I'm not having any wedding gifts. Not out of generosity, but our flat's tiny. We don't want any wedding gifts, so we're raising money for my autistic nephew's school. And a couple of papers have run that as a story. And it's like, it's just none of your business. Yeah. It's just a little side project that I'm trying to raise money for my nephew's school. And it's not like they put a link into the Just Giving page.
No.
And what I think Entertainment Today, whoever the fuck they are, ran the story, Cinema, known for his cutting humour. And I was like, no, I'm not. Shit on the task force.
It's because you're so evil and try and stop people winning money, they assume you're bad. You're doing your job, so you won't just
have to
roll
do a job.
Over and let
clinical
me...
fraud. Yes. If it's not. Oh, criminal fraud.
If you let them yeah. win. Let me win if I'm on them, won't you?
I won't be your chaser. We know each other too well.
Oh, really? Yeah. I'd have thought they would like that, though, on the show, to put you with someone you knew.
They try to do that as little as possible.
I don't want to do it if you're not the guy. I'll have no fun in winning everything. I just think, on the chase, so that would be my tactic. There's enough luck in it. It's only getting through the first bit. The first bit's difficult, and then there's the questions. It's just, you know, it's a good show. It's no Tipping Point, but it's a good show. What I like about Tipping Point is, and as I'm usually very competitive, I don't know if you've noticed, and usually need to win, but on Tipping Point, I wouldn't have minded even if I hadn't won. there's so much. You can just like someone could like you can have someone. There was someone from Love Island on there, and I just realised at one point, Christ, if she dislodges all of those coins right now, then she'll win getting one question right, and basically that more or less happened. So it's there's so much luck.
I love the fact that you started with Celebrity Mastermind, yeah. and you've gradually worked your way down until your ambition is finally realised. It's almost like dreaming of winning the World Quizzing Championships and being happy with the British.
That's not fair. Let's ask you a couple more emergency questions. I'm aware our time is limited due to, you know, it being Sunday and we've got to get
10:44 is my train.
10:44, okay. We'll come on.
As long as I'm on that train, I'm here as long as you like.
Okay, cool. Here's a new... Who is the most famous or surprising person you found yourself in a lift with? Not that you've got into a lift with... I'm allowed to expand that out to escalators and doorways and...
It's not the life I've led, mate.
No?
I can't honestly give you a true answer to that question. Okay. It's just never happened.
You've never been elected with anyone, even at a TV studio. Someone else has got in from the next door studio.
If I could remember, I'd tell you, but okay. It's just never happened.
Okay. That's all right.
Sorry.
That's all right. Who is the most famous person you've asked to dance? I'm guessing no one as well. David Jones. Well, I've never asked anyone famous to dance.
No.
Do you dance? Do you like dancing?
Parkinson's.
Historically, you can still
dance. I'm not. I'm not a dancer.
No. Dancing gets more fun now, Paul. That we
got all the excuses lined up now. Yeah. We're thinking of because me and Ollie, neither of us like to dance. We're thinking of trying to hire people and wearing masks with our face on. So that we are an ever present on the dance floor during our wedding. Neither of us are dancers.
No, I had my first dance at our wedding. We just got... I hadn't really planned anything for my wedding. I tried to bust the speech, basically.
Yeah. What was your first dance?
First dance was to Girl from Mars by Ash.
Great song. Ours is I Will Never Be Your Woman by Whitetail.
But we just got drunk, so drunk that we just like went mental, and it was really. And my niece was actually quite impressed how cool I was because I was chucking. I was started spinning my wife around. I mean, I could have killed her. it's a bit like a bit. Do you remember in Top Secret where they're doing Saturday Night Fever, which is I started thinking about Top Secret because I saw Top Secret. It must be 40 years ago. Top Secret came out
1984 Oh, yeah, because I remember going to see it at the Bromley Odeon.
Yeah, I saw it in the cinema over there. I don't think it's a cinema anymore in Oxford with my brother. Oh, happy days. Right, we're going to go deeper into the emergency questions book and find something extraordinary. Let's see what this is. I don't know what this question is, and I'm going to go through it. I think this might be a complicated one. If you and your four best friends were in the Spice Girls... What would be your Spice names? This is a trick question. The names are easy. The real test is to work out who your best four friends are.
Wow.
I've given away the trick.
Malish would be... it's quite a long nickname.
Yeah.
But Malish, a friend of mine from medical school, would be the guy coincidentally also called Sinha so that his son, at his son's cricket games, everyone goes up to him and goes, "You're not the guy off the chase."
Okay.
Then there is Dave, and he's a medical friend of mine.
Yeah.
And he is possibly infertile spice. another Dave, who runs a website company now, but was a comedian that I used to really fancy in the noughties, and his nickname would be, if I didn't fancy him and write really good material to impress him in the noughties, I wouldn't be here now, Spice.
Wow, okay.
So that's three.
Yeah,
And you need one more. The fourth one is Duncan, again from medical school,
yeah,
who is... mention me on your Wikipedia page or I'm going to vandalise it, Spice. And thanks to him, there was a story on my Wikipedia page for at least a few years that I once ate a family-sized pork pie in a test match for England and India at the Oval. It was England-Sri Lanka. So,
Well, that was a good question because we found out that your four best friends are all from medical school.
No, not Dave, the website guy.
Oh, no, Dave, the website guy. But lots of them from that. That's interesting that you three of your four best friends are from that long ago, which I respect and think is a good thing.
It's a really tight medical school, St. George's, Tooting. And if you want to know how good it is at medicine, the last two alumni are me and Harry Hill, which we'll give you on the wiki page. But it's really tight because it's one of those where they all stay in Tooting and Wandsworth or Balham afterwards. Yeah. It never merged with another in the medical school, has become a bigger entity.
Okay.
And so socially, I mean, at my wedding, there's going to be at least 40 people from a med school at the wedding.
Wow. Here's a follow-up question to the Spice Girls question.
Yep.
Of the four friends you chose to be in your Spice Girls band and who you've been given funny names, Old Spice, how do you come up with this stuff? That's my joke in the book. You didn't do that one. How many do you think would have chosen you to be in their Spice Girls band?
Three, I think.
Yeah, not Dave the website guy.
Not Dave the website guy. I was at his wedding, but I wasn't A-list.
No.
But the other three, absolutely. I mean, I was best man for two of them.
Okay, that's good to know. Good emergency question. Should use that a lot more, shouldn't I? What do you feel, Oxford? You're just disappointed I'm not doing the old classics. I'll give an old classic. You might have done. I don't think I've done this one to you before. Maybe I have. Would you prefer? I don't think I've asked you. Would you prefer to have a hand made out of ham or an armpit that dispenses sun cream?
A hand?
Hand made out of ham. You can eat it as much as you want. As much ham. It's not actually ham. It's just a ham-like thing that grows out of your hand. No animal has suffered.
Mm.
Or an armpit that dispenses sun cream of whatever fact you want, just enough for your personal use.
I don't think a hand made of ham is much use for me now, so I'm gonna skip that. It's just going to fall everywhere.
Well,
so I'm just going to go for the armpit and the sun cream. Okay. I'll be done.
Cool. Everything's about Parkinson's disease. That's your problem.
What you have is dopamine privilege. Enjoy it.
Imagine that your finger is fine. Would you rather... Would you rather have a tit that dispenses talcum powder or a finger that can travel through time?
I'd like a finger that could travel through time.
Where would your finger go if it could travel?
So before I did all the boxing fights. Muhammad Ali versus after that, I just thought Muhammad Ali Foreman, one of the greatest sports events of all time. I'd like to. It would travel through time. Actually, no. Do you know what it would do? Having only heard this question for the first time, if I had a finger that could travel through time, I would just go to the 1930s and pick up Donald Bradman and take him to the 1980s and have him bat against the West Indies pace bowling attack of the 1980s and see how fucking impressive he is then. That's what I'd do.
It's a very strong finger you've got. I'm not sure it's allowed to take things through time, but I'm going to allow it. Right, well, we're going to wrap up pretty soon because we're going to get you a cab to the station. It's only about 2 minutes walk away, but, you know, Parkinson's disease, apparently.
It's funny you say that. At the station, the taxi driver refused to take me.
Really?
When I asked. And I get that now. It's journeys that I don't want to do because I'm lazy and I've got a disease card to play.
Yeah.
And taxis won't do it. They're not having any of it. So that's why I was slightly late here. Yeah. Well, not slightly late, but slightly delayed.
You were perfectly on time, but fuck that guy. I'm allowed to take the piss, he's not. So you're touring this show throughout 2020, which is when this podcast is going out. Luckily for you.
It's still called A Hazy Little Fig Called Love.
Yeah.
Because it was just too late to change the title of the show.
Yeah.
But it's only partly about getting married, and it's really just about fighting back and making sure that when it comes down to it, I've got to carry on earning money.
Yeah.
And I'm the best going
to
do that.
There's no reason not to. I mean, you know, there's no reason to not to carry on what you're doing at the moment at all. So it's really fantastic, I think, that you've been open about this.
I've got no choice. No.
Well,
I mean, there's a lot of people saying, you're very brave. I haven't got any choice. I'm a professional comedian who's on telly every week. I need to give the Daily Express some stuff to fill their online pages. Yeah. And it might feel brave. It's just very pragmatic. I've just got to get on with writing jokes.
Yeah. Well, you do, and you will. And I wish you the best of luck with everything, Paul. It's fantastic for you to come on. Ladies and gentlemen, the amazing Paul Sinar! Thank you very much.
Good call.
I'm going to be over there in the foyer. I'll see you in a sec. You have been listening to Alastair with me, Rich Terring, and my guest Paul Sinhar. Thank you to Pest. This music gets better every time I hear it. I love it. Thank you very much to everyone at the Oxford Playhouse where we recorded this particular podcast. Thank you to everybody at GoFasterStripe.com. It's mainly Chris Evans, not that one, but there's a hard team of people right there, my fan friends. And thank you to Acast, British Comedy Guide. And sorry I called you Cuckness the other week in your titles. That was uncalled for. My producer for this series has been largely James Hingley. Thank you also to the producer, Ben Walker, to whom I'm particularly indebted. My executive producer for this show was Andrew Smiler White. His nickname's Smiler. It's ironic, on set he did not smile once, not even when we were being all funny. But, you know, each to their own, that's what I'm saying. This is the Sky Potato Fuzz and Go Faster Strike production. Head to the richardherring.com/gigs page of my website. You can find out where I'm going to be. I've got London gigs coming up. Michael Palin's on. The Parapod are on. Lolly Edipokey's on. Lots of people coming up. And there'll be more people by the time you hear this. And there's dates every Monday in March and April the 6th. There's also Birmingham and Norwich coming up, but I suspect they may be sold out. But you never know. You might get tickets. Go and check it out. Check on Twitter and stuff. Anyway, I'm going to go now, so goodbye. Thank you for listening to me. If you did, and if you didn't, then you were a smell of poo. If you don't know that I said that about you, but you do. So I have won!
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.